Okay, so we'll begin this evening's meeting of the Finance and Facilities Committee, August 10th, 2015, at 6:31 in the evening. Would you please take a moment and review your minutes and let me know if you meet with your approval from the June 8th, 2015 meeting.
I'm good, Bob.
Okay, then we'll have the first order of business this evening is the FCC construction budget update.
Okay. So, in your package, hello everybody, again, nice summer, I hope. It's going okay. It's been a good summer on our side, too. John and Adam and the crew have been doing, I think, a great job getting ready for the start of school. A lot of help from Dave and Bob. So, in your package, I've got a few things. One is the typical summary of the budget that you should be familiar with from past reports. And Eric is not here, so I can't debate her on whether it's 800,000 or 1.1. So we'll see what she says when she comes back. But if you track this number from previous reports, this number fluctuates, but the number that I'm referring to is the contingency and savings remaining in the budget. This number has fluctuated a little bit here and there because you encounter different things that happen during the course of construction. Last time we had this report, it was actually a little under 1.1, and now it's a little over 1.1. But substantially, it hasn't changed a lot since we've been doing this report, which is a good thing, which means that the allowances that we have in contractors' contracts and allowances that John and Fred had carried in the budget for certain things that we anticipated came through pretty much as we expected them. So currently, the project remains under budget by $1.1 million. And then in the what we always refer to as below-the-line budgets, the escalation money of $235,000 was never needed to be touched because we advanced the project forward, didn't experience the escalation. So that one, when you add those two together, that 1.3, 1.35 is available to the district to use to help fund the Churchill phase, which is what we talked about all along. So that's the big picture.
Well, it's money that wasn't spent.
Right. It was money that was allocated for the four schools that was saved that can now be used for the next phase.
But I do think when we made that approval, and someone can correct me if I'm wrong, we had earmarked this savings as the funding source for those additional classrooms. And if we didn't have enough savings, then there was going to be some budget adjustments because we limited the amount that we could take from reserves.
You were correct.
Okay. So having a higher number here
helps.
Helps. Because it lessens what we can do in the reserves. Okay.
So through this process, one of the things that we did as one of the very first steps in the process was to get board to pass a resolution to allow us to move the money within the budget from allowances and contingencies into contracts as long as it didn't exceed $50,000. That was a resolution that was prepared by the attorney, approved by the board, as long as it went through Paul and Bob. And that process had worked very well, and it kind of reinforces the whole planning process which took place, which started out with this roughly $1.1, $1.2 million in contingency savings, and we've been able to retain it through the whole thing. Now, also with your report is a list of change orders that took place within the contracts under that $50,000 threshold that essentially moved money in and out of those different contingency and allowance items to fund miscellaneous things that, again, we anticipated. We knew that there was going to be some unsuitable soils, for example. We knew that there were going to be some handling of materials. We knew there was going to be some need for overtime work to achieve the schedules that we had outlined. So along with tonight's report is a detail of, by school, which contractors got received change orders and where that money basically came from to accommodate executing the work as required. And you'll see, I think, as you go through this, that that work, you know, everything fell under the $50,000 threshold, which was required to do. We didn't have any anomalies from that regard. And when you total the change orders that were executed within that resolution, there are several positive change orders. There are also several credits back to the district for money that was not spent or that was credited because of, for example, the Churchill and Forest Glen, we changed the foundations, which was a result of the credit because they had deep foundations and we didn't need deep foundations in, so the district got that credit back. So the sum total of all that across the four schools was about $195,000, which on a $13.7 million job is 1.4%. So, and largely most of that money was anticipated through line item allowances that we earmarked in contractors' contracts. So we feel pretty good about it, but that's the 30,000 foot level. I'd be happy to answer any questions or talk about any topics there that are embedded in detail. Okay. I have a construction update, but that's for the board meeting, right? Okay.
One question on the overall budget for you, Bob. When that nice spreadsheet that shows budget to actuals, are we at the point where the direct soft costs that we'll know that was $1,796,000 and change, that we'll know the actuals to that budgeted number?
We're actually going to be under for this year because we underspent on professional services related to these four building additions. We spent some money the previous fiscal year.
I'm not looking at it from a fiscal year standpoint. I'm looking at it as a project standpoint. It is the same question I ask every time you submit this. We have the budget versus actual for the hard cost. And what I'm looking for now that these projects are complete from the soft cost standpoint, I think you're going to have some miscellaneous maybe inspection reports or something submitted to the city or something to the village, something like that. But most of this 1.76, or excuse me, 1.796, should either have been spent or is going to be spent in the next 30 days. So I'd like to see a comparison of the budget to the actual.
Okay.
No matter what fiscal year.
Yeah.
Understood.
The overall
number for the past two point years.
Exactly. Because it's the same for the other construction numbers.
So I can give you the starting point. What made up that 1.796 is where we started.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, you want to talk about the? I already presented it and sat down. So
I had my number here, but. There must have been another number. So what was the number that we're at? What is the number?
So you have on this, if this is the current one, so this is the under budget, 1.1.
Okay.
And then this money is also available because it was never needed for construction.
Right, I know. That's great.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you, Joe. Yeah.
So the next order of business this evening is the a TRS compensation report for administrators, and that's going to be jointly presented by Lori and I. Lori presented has some material for the time this evening, and then I have a spreadsheet.
And I'm Mr. Handout, so I'll hand out the handouts. Can you get the right handout? Just ask me if you want a handout. And just quickly, I mean, we're going to spend a couple minutes on this, and the goal here is, and I met with Lori and Bob and Paul, is for today, is give it what I call TRS 101. Educate not only us, but anybody here. Some people may be experts in it already, but what's often a good idea is get everybody on the same page with it, because there's a lot of nuances to it that are good, and Lori and Bob certainly know their way to navigate around it. So we're going to start with that, and where we're going to end, where we'd like to end, is to give Lori some direction. Ultimately, we're talking about a compensation basket for the administrators here. And we want to compare apples to apples as best you can. So what we often do in this case, is what I've found in my 2+ years here, is comparables. What's in the marketplace? Where are we relative? Are we right in the middle. We're at the high end. We're at the low end. And then we can discuss and brainstorm about that. But for now, if we could leave with this discussion, give it a lower direction. Because that's, this specific information is a lot of detail where it's not necessarily in the database that she has. So she's going to have to make a lot of phone calls. We have school starting, new hires, all that stuff. It's a priority, but in the priority of things, I don't see it happening in 2 weeks unless you're miracles.
No.
So the goal would be to get that data together over the next 4 weeks. And we'll see, and we'll adjust from that based on what feedback you get, because there might be no return calls because they're just as busy as you. So with that said, I'll let Lori take over and I'll start doing that thing.
Joe had asked that we get some background on TRS and THIS, which is the Teachers Health Insurance Security Fund. So I'm going to come over here. With them, they probably have my papers. So copies of the slides for any members of the panel are out. So first of all, Joe had asked for just a little background knowledge of what TRS is. And TRS is the Teachers Retirement System. It was established back in 1939, and it was designed to be a pension for public school educators outside of the city of Chicago. It's governed by the Illinois Pension Code, so many of the laws related to TRS are written into the pension code, and it's administered by a 13-member board of trustees. Members of the Finance Committee, you have my notes, so anything that I'm going to say is kind of written in your packet. It goes along with the slides. So another basic question is who in District 41 belongs to TRS or would be considered a member of TRS? And it would be any teacher or licensed administrator. The TRS has its own specific definition of what a teacher is. So anybody who works in a certified position, so like even if you're a social worker, if you're a school psychologist, you do something other than what we would call a teacher, you're considered a teacher through TRS. Anybody who's an administrator who works for the district that holds licensure and is required to hold licensure for the position is part of TRS. There are some administrators for whom licensure is not needed. They would not be part of TRS, and some who are. So TRS members must contribute to the pension, because one question that came up was, you know, do we have to participate in this? And yes, we are required to participate in it. And they're not covered by Social Security. So there's not a Social Security deduction for anybody who's a TRS member. There's the TRS contribution. And for people who work in the public schools who are not a member of TRS, they usually participate in the Illinois Municipal Retirement Fund. And that's when there's a threshold for the number of hours that you have to work to participate in that. So someone who's part-time and only works, you know, 2 hours a day would not qualify for that. You have to work 600 hours a year to IMRF. But those are kind of the two pension systems that we're working with. The other question that came up with was, how is it financed? And so the Teachers Retirement System is financed through member contributions. And there are two different ways that member contributions are calculated. And that's the, one of those next handouts, Joe, the one that says employer guide pickup. And then the next one with the rate for the two. So this is a section from, what Joe's handing out is a section from the TRS Employer Guide, which is available online. And I did a little guide for you, all 70 pages, with some certain sections about it first covers the member contribution. And TRS defines two different ways that they can collect the contributions. One is the salary reduction plan, and that's basically when member contributions are deducted from the salary and then paid to TRS. And for the past 25 years, teachers have had that as their method. So they get paid their salary, and the TRS turns 0.4% and it's up. The other method, again, according to TRS, is the salary schedule add-on method. And that's when 9.4% share is paid by the employer on behalf of the employee. And that's been the case with us is with administrators. And I looked back into employment contracts to see how far back this went, and it's been at least 25 years that the board has paid that. So just as kind of not advocating one way or another, just kind of a piece of information to share that that's been part of that package for a number of years. When it's done through the salary schedule add-on method, it's multiplied by a larger factor because that 9.4% of paid TRS is considered credible earnings. The other way that TRS is funded is through employer contributions. District 41 and any other public school district in the state of Illinois is required to contribute a certain amount each year as the employer contribution. It's also funded through state funds. There are appropriations every year in the state budget that go towards the funding of TRS, and then TRS does have some investment income that helps fund the pension plan. So in your handouts that Joe just handed around, you see the rates for this year, for the last couple of years and this year, yeah, and then the employer guide piece. Then the next piece that people have asked about is THIS. That stands for the Teachers Health Insurance Security Fund, and that's the fund that provides the money for the Teachers Retirement Insurance Program. Oftentimes people use those acronyms kind of interchangeably, but this is the money that funds this program. And the Teachers Retirement Insurance Program started in 1995, and it was designed to provide, you know, health care coverage for retired teachers and their eligible dependents. TRS acts as a service agent that collects the money and through THIS and keeps the retirement insurance program going. These funds can't be commingled, and again, these are set every year by the state. And then here in District 41, who contributes to THIS? Anybody in TRS is also in THIS. So it's teachers and licensed administrators and a TRS number. And then the next slide is about financing. Again, through member contributions, and there's the two different methods with THIS. There's the salary reduction plan and the salary schedule add-on method. State funds are go into THIS, employer contributions go into THIS, and then also premiums. So anybody who's a retired teacher who's in the teacher's retirement insurance program pays monthly premiums towards their insurance coverage.
Lori, got just a quick question for you on the THIS portion of it.
Sure.
Are the administrators and the teachers both contributing that percentage, or is the, how does that work? Is the board picking up the administrators' portion of it?
Yes. So the teachers have had that as a deduction, and the administrators have had the board pay for it. I looked back in an administrator contract and could find as early as 1998 for that, but not before that.
So the board's picking up the retirement portion and the health insurance portion.
Correct.
For the administrators. The
Correct.
Teachers are paying, they're paying their own.
For the teachers, it's a deduction. It's the two different methods, the TRS. So we use one method for the teachers and a different method for the administrators. Okay. Bob has an example that he wants to, that he's going to share with you.
So did you send that around?
No, going
on. There you go. So what I did is I put together a spreadsheet that basically lays out the different teacher programs that we have, meaning that we have Teach 20, Teach 24, and Teach 24J. Those are the various teacher groups that we have, and then we have administrators. And what I tried to do is highlight for you what if the teachers, what are their contributions, and what does the board pay on their behalf, and again, and the administrators, what do they pay, and what does the board pay on their behalf. So if you look at that first highlighted box, you've got TRS contributions as a deduction, meaning the employee is paying it. They're paying 9.4%. And for the THIS portion, they are paying 1.07%. Then if you look straight across on the right-hand side of the box, the district is, they pay, part of this is a benefit. They pay the THI employer person, THIS portion, which is 0.80%. They have the board share 2.2 upgrade, which is 0.58%. And then we pay Medicare also. So I wanted to include that also.
Can you explain the 2.2 upgrade to me?
That's a particular program that was brought into effect a number of years ago to better fund these particular funds. I don't know the specifics exactly between the 2.2 upgrade, but it has not been around as long as the other systems.
Okay.
But we do pay that on the behalf of our on behalf of our teachers, and then we pay it on behalf of the administrators. There's a slightly greater portion in student, and I can talk about them when we get down below to the administrator section here. So all told, you pay approximately 2.83%. For the teacher portion of benefits. If you move down to the administrator side, we have TRS contributions. The board pays that, and because it's an upgrade as it would be if you were on a salary schedule and the board was paying that on behalf of the teachers, it's actually, instead of the 9.4, it works out to be 10.37%. The THI, which is the NIST contribution for the board, is 1.07%. The board share THIS, again, is 0.8, as it is above with the teachers, and then the board share for the 2.2 upgrade is a little bit higher than the teacher portion of 0.58. That goes up to 0.64 because it's being paid on their behalf. The total with Medicare included is about 14.33% of the total.
Bob, is the Medicare portion, is that required by law as the employer too? So yes. there's no choice in that. It's required,
yeah.
Right?
And
it's not really a benefit to anybody because the board, the district would be required.
Any employer is required to pay it. And so Joe, during our meeting, he asked, well, give me an example. What does it cost for an administrator? What does it cost for a teacher? So I just arrived at an example salary of $100,000, and you see what the board is paying for an administrator versus a teacher all the way across. And at $100,000 salary, the board is picking up $14,300 for an administrator, and for a teacher, it's about $2,830.
But again, Medicare to me is, you know, when you're really looking at it, to me that's kind of negligible. I realize it's a cost to the district, but in terms of a benefit, maybe where the district's maybe
it's a non-negotiable.
Giving,
you
know, exactly.
But and I agree with what you're saying.
But it's a good to show what the full benefit package is and what the board's picking up. And
well,
what's missing from
that's me, true, but you wouldn't probably go into an employer in private industry and they'd say, well, here's the Medicare portion that we're picking up for you. You'd never know that.
No,
so
but as a business person...
When we look at the teacher portion of it, just as an example, it shows $2,800. Really, half of that is Medicare, which is required by law. So the benefit to the teacher is really $1,300.
But when
so,
you look at it from the employer standpoint, what are my costs to this employee?
Mm-hmm.
That's the way we're presenting it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Bob put together, just as if, you know, so people understand, there's no, and it was stated earlier, there's no Social Security. And if you look at, as an
right.
employer, you have employees, you have to pay Social Security.
I do.
So, right, so you understand that. So we're actually, it's a perspective thing, I think, and we, the perspective we wanted to give the board here was what is, from your payment standpoint, so that's why Medicare is included.
Mm-hmm.
But to kind of dovetail off of this, I have a question. On the teachers, FISB and the TR22E, is that contractual or is that a state statute that we have?
That's state.
That's
state. Yeah.
So just as the Medicare is federal, this is...
These are employer portions.
It's a state statute. You have to do.
When I get up, you know, I get an annual email from TRS, you know, and they tell me this is the district's contribution to the employer contribution versus what is the employee's contribution.
Which one?
No negotiating.
That's those two on the teacher. Those are just like Medicare. You're going to have to pay them no matter what.
Okay.
That's why I was dovetailing.
Yep. And they change from time to time, from year to year.
So any, again, I look at it this way. Any. Of the $2,800 to the teacher is required by law, anyways.
Yes.
So it's not really a benefit to the teacher necessarily. The district does have to pay it.
We're required to pay
it. It is a benefit to him, hopefully, but yes.
Yeah. They get to use it.
Just like Social Security, hopefully for us, who
right.
Social Security.
And we all talk about it. Social Security is a benefit to us.
Right. Well, it is a benefit
to us. No,
but that's why I was dovetailing on this too, because I wasn't certain.
Yeah.
So by law, for the administrators, is this B and TR22 by law or no?
Yes, for both of them. That is an employer responsibility.
It's the same for those. So those bottom three for the administrator, kind of just to keep the same theme going
mm-hmm.
there, those are by statute.
Yep, we're the same one for them.
And there's a rate that we're assigned yearly.
Thank you for the clarification. Okay.
So I think that brought us to comparable districts. Because I think part of the desire for this discussion was, you know, how does this fit in with how other districts do things, and where are we? So we have talked about some ideas for potential comparable districts. One of the first ideas out there, the direction from the Finance Committee in terms of what you'd like to have added to this list, if it's the right list or not the right list, so we're open to some direction from that standpoint. So we were considering taking a look at the District 87 feeders. We were also considering looking at District 181 in Hinsdale, because oftentimes we hear comparisons from our district to that district. And then another district that was brought up where I don't believe the board pays the employee side of TRS is District 204 in Naperville. Are there other, first of all, is that the right set, at least at the beginning list from the finance committee?
Are those the same districts that we're comparing Scholastic data to as peers?
Yes and no. So from an academic standpoint, we always look at the feeders when we're looking at its performance. But the Chicago Tribune will compare the entire Chicagoland area. We picked ones that we felt that people often talked about in terms of being somewhat comparable to District 41. Another district that has been listed as one that is similar to us in demographics and from a financial standpoint is District 93 up in Kildare. So, again, I'm just throwing out ideas, so I want some direction.
So when you pull those comps, are you pulling what? Are you going to pull both the contribution rates as well as the current salary or average salary or salary by business unit?
I think in order to do it well, we need to look at everything because really this is part of a compensation package.
Right.
And to slice just one piece off without the rest of it,
which is
why we need to make phone calls for this to the HR people or to the business people to really make sure I've got the right numbers coming through.
Thanks.
So we can get everything, not just what might be on a survey.
Mm-hmm.
So.
May I ask a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Is it possible to list or identify the criteria when you pick a Kildare or a Hinsdale, et cetera? It's that's a kind of an expected known because we use those a lot in our feeders. But what's the criteria around selecting a particular district in terms of it being comparable?
It depends on what you're looking at. I mean, you can look at comparable districts for people expenditure. You can look at comparable districts for student performance. You can look at comparable districts for demographics. There are all different ways we can look at it. So,
and that's why
I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, I think the finance committee and others need to give feedback so that they're comfortable. Because this is, we don't want to send Lori out for even two times. Let's be serious, four or five, two times to go do this. So. If we think about it, I mean, to me, when you're looking at a business, who do we compete with for these positions? I mean, at the end of the day, if that's who we're competing with, then that's the cost structure for that employee, that team member, that we really want to look at.
Yeah, that's why I asked the question. If my understanding is when we talk Scholastics, we always traditionally try to say, okay, this is our peer groups that we try to maintain with or try to. So if these are the three that we try to compare scholastically, I would think the support structure that is in place to facilitate the scholastic benefits that those schools are doing, we would want to similarly match. To me, that's an apples to apples comparison.
So those districts that are performing similarly to us or slightly stronger?
The ones that you guys feel we should be comparing ourselves as peers scholastically when you show us data.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's my criteria question too, I'm sorry, because it's around if these other districts are hitting X and the goal for districts is to, do close achievement gap, increase, et cetera, then the teachers and administrators certainly have to be at a level that work progresses. So what are those criteria that are common or similar? Yeah. Thanks. Thank you.
I struggle a little bit with that because I've never seen us compare ourselves to Hinsdale or Kildare or anything. That's not a criticism of you, but I just, we just went through an academic update and I didn't see any comparisons to really any district. So I guess, Naperville, to my knowledge, is the only one in the area that doesn't contribute. And then the second thing is, for me, from a competitive standpoint, I've said this before, I'm not seeing growth of administrators leave our district. They're staying. So we're the only ones that are leaving are maybe not, they're leaving maybe not on their own accord. So, when you see that to me is an indication that we're more than in a beneficial spot from a competitive standpoint. So, if Joe wants to take a look at it, we can take a look at it, but I'm not sure what it's going to tell us. necessarily.
Our
marketplace would dictate if we were losing administrators a couple of years, or a couple each year, we're seeing a flow out of administrators, then you have to think, you know, something's not right here. So we're competitively at a disadvantage. Where is that? And then you'd be looking at that, but we're not seeing that. I mean, I don't see our administrators, you know, for the most part, leaving. So
there's other factors besides compensation. There's the culture of work environment. There's maybe the approach we take to some progressive education standards that keeps them. So it's hard to say which factor is the one keeping people here. It could be the compensation. It could be. And most likely it's a combination of them all. But that said,
could be, but they're not.
But
they're
that,
not leaving, so.
That said, it's still for us. Somebody's retiring soon, so we're going to have, you know, Karen now. We're going to be competing for that position in the future. So to me, I just look at who do you guys think we compete with to bring those people in? Because one, if there's one district that isn't paying full portion or partial portion, whatever they're paying, quite frankly, we need to know that. But we actually need to compare their whole basket. Just because they're not picking it up there, they may be picking it up with 2 extra days vacation and, you know, 20 more thousand. And so who knows how they're doing it? And that's the comparison I believe we need to see. So I'm glad, I would want them in your data to be included in your group. But at the end of the day, what I go back to is we've looked since the 2+ years I've been on the board, we've been presenting data from you, Lori, that says here's our comparables of who we're competing against. And then we make adjustments to certain people's salaries at times we have, or we have a new hire. Like a new, the principals and assistant principals are in this group, correct?
Correct.
So we've just made some recent hires in that regard. In fact, I think we have 2 people on our list for assistant principals, correct? If I recognize it.
We had
right.
2 previous. We hired 2 this spring.
Right. So we're in the market, you know. So who are we competing with for those individuals? Because we're bringing them in. So there isn't a lot of turnover, Kurt. I recognize that, especially at the cabinet level, which I think is more what you're referring to. But since I'm here, there's been, you know, at least what we were at 2 principals. We added 2 assistant principals. We added those 2. We now have 2 more. Steve Dively's meeting, so that's 5 people.
Oh, yeah, but they weren't leaving. I mean, we had a retirement to add. It wasn't like somebody went on to greener pasture.
No, I know, but we still needed to look at those compensations to understand the basket we're given isn't comparable to the market. So, I don't know that we're giving you great direction here, Lori, but at least we're brainstorming.
I had a question.
Sure.
I thought when we did benchmarking, the guy that did that,
Advantage Analytics.
There
was a whole list of districts
that they used.
Right.
35. And again, maybe that's, you don't use all the 35, but I mean,
that's
I think that's.
Right. So,
that's the question. Which of the 35?
Right. Well, at least we have a starting point, and you can, remove some of them as you put. What this process in place.
Here's the thing.
Well, I guess I can agree. We just had our academic update in June, and we've had no comparison to any other district. So who are we comparing ourselves to? You know, if we want to look for people that would be attracted to districts that we're going to compare ourselves to academically, who is that?
Let me set that map piece.
I haven't heard that. So
remember, map is not shared by each district. The other data that we have shared in years past is ISAT data, which is required by the state to be shared. MAP, there is no requirement out there for it to be shared, and even some within our feeder system don't like that data to be shared out amongst. So we have no control of saying, district whatever, give us your MAP data. We have no control over that, and most people don't post their MAP data. So just to make sure we're all on the same page there, we have in the past, and we have used.
But last spring when we had the ISATs, which we can compare, I don't recall seeing a comparison that
we don't.
Yeah, we used Clayton Graham, and he gave 32 different schools. mm-hmm. or 37 or whatever that number was.
That was a 2012-13 benchmarking study. I'm talking about 13-14. The last year we took an ISAT, I don't think we had an
I know update. In my tenure, I've brought Clayton in. Yeah. So, can't remember first year or second year. But
yeah, no, I mean, it was done. The benchmarking study was done in 11-12 for 11-12 and 12-13, but we haven't seen it since then. And I mean, that was 37 districts, so was that the 30? I mean, that seems like a lot to be comparing to, but, you know, we haven't since then in a couple of years really compared ourselves to other districts. So, you know, I guess that's my question.
When does that comparison happen? I thought that's in the fall.
You have to have ISAT data.
Right.
You have to have something where everybody can contribute to.
So
we don't have that.
We don't have it. So that's why it hasn't. So.
But we did have it in 13-14, but we didn't do the comparison. That was the last year we had it. We didn't have ISAT in 14-15. But in 13-14, we had the data, but we didn't do the
So who do you guys want to see? Because we have one more presentation tonight.
Two more. I mean, we need to give Lori direction. I mean, if you don't, no one feels 100% comfortable giving her direction now, I suggest sending her an email. But I also suggest that if you're not comfortable, ultimately when she goes and gets our comparables, you know, you had time to put your input in because we don't, it's a lot of time to call the districts. There are certain districts, though, so just this is what I like to finish with. That you have, is it the feeder district that it's easier to get the information?
It is easier. One of the neighboring business managers collects them, but I did check in with her last week. She hasn't gotten them all yet.
But
it would still take, but that's all right. I don't mind doing it.
Okay.
37 would be really hard. We could narrow the field down. And I'm not married to any of these ones that we suggested. We were just trying to.
Lori, is it reasonable to think that you could email to the board 37 and have the board say, I'd really like to see this one and this one and this one? And then at least you
get. I think we're going to get six different answers and maybe overlap on 30% or 40% of them, and she's going to end up with 22.
That's why I asked about criteria.
I think Drew's probably saying maybe then you look at the 30% we overlap on as a narrowing point. I mean, right now you've got no. That's not a bad idea. I mean, you don't really have any suggestions.
I do think we want 204. So but that's the one that doesn't do it because we want to look at their full compensation package. Just because they're not doing it, I mean, there's a reason not to do this on the full compensation package. We're looking at the data you just showed us. I mean, you're paying more by doing it. So, you know, some districts could say, why would I want to pay the upcharge to do it? But that's clear in the example he gave us. That said, you know, I'm saying that one we should definitely have in. It'll give you maybe a smarter way to do it. You know, compensate. Maybe it won't, but if you're doing it differently, definitely want to look at it. But, Drew, I think that's fine. I mean, Lori, I would say let's get it out, but let's get it back to her. You know, promptly, and I say promptly is Wednesday in the business. If she gets it out tomorrow, you have 2 days to look at it because this is a chore here. So we have to make sure we get it back. If somebody doesn't feel that's time enough because you got work related stuff. Certainly, just chime in and get special dispensation.
Well, I just add. I mean, I know, you know, we're now heading into the next school year. You know, I think, you know, and there's some disagreement here amongst the board, but. I thought, you know, coming out of a closed session, we had agreed on, and I went back and listened to tapes, we agreed on first meeting in June talking about it, and it got pushed to the second meeting. Some people didn't quite understand where we were at with dates. But now, you know, that would have given Lori plenty of time over the summer to take a look at this, and now we're, you know.
Kurt, I'm going to look at things going forward, so I'll just say.
But we're being told, you know, this needs to be, this, you know, we need to be mindful because we're starting the school year and we're putting these caveats on you. We could have given her 7 weeks.
I could have played the lotto last week if I knew the numbers.
But we had agreed to 7 weeks, and now all of a sudden we're asking Lori.
Are you requesting more time?
I'm just saying don't act as if now all of a sudden we've got to, you know, take our time with some of this stuff because there may not be time from staff to do this. We could have had staff working on this through the summer months. So I just wanted that noted.
Duly noted. It's noted. Thank you for making that. But if you're okay with the Wednesday feedback, okay, cool. Let's move on to the next topic for Bob.
The next order of business is parent presentation and time scope curriculum.
Okay, and I'm going to keep it short because it'll come to, it'll also be at the board meeting for discussion. I have a few teachers who are coming who will be able to answer any questions on that. But I gave you a lot of history in the discussion section there, really around the reauthorization of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act. Those kinds of things, and that we will be returning to a science assessment this year. We have been gravitating towards implementation of the NGSS. We'll talk a little bit more about that at the actual board meeting. But given the fact that that assessment is looming and we knew it was going to be coming back, and we will be assessing on the NGSS standards and our old science standards, teachers are feeling that they want a resource to help them support. And they got by this past year with some other things, but that's what they're looking for. So this is really just to and let you know kind of the cost of what this resource would be for this year. Like I said, we'll have a discussion in the board meeting. If there's anything you'd like, you want to ask or comment on.
Just comment for the board meeting.
Okay, so then the final order of business in this evening is we have a revised bid recommendation. It had to do with some excavating work at Churchill, and Jack is going to present.
So we had an anomaly with the recommendations that were presented back in June at the board meeting. The apparent low excavating contractor, American Grading, after being issued the contract that the board authorized us to award to them, came to us and said, there's a mistake in the documents, I'm going to need some extra money. So John and Fred and Adam went through the process with FGM, double-checking everything, and come to find out through additional time spent with American that the mistake was there. The documents are correct. The scope is correct. They left something out of their bid. So when we did our original scope review with American back prior to the June award, this didn't come up. And, you know, going through the scope of the project with American, everything seemed to be very straightforward and been a trusted vendor of ours for years. They've bid other work that we do and they've always done a good job. Well, on this particular contract, they've decided that they can't deliver the required scope of work for the bid amount that they provide. So, our letter is been prepared to describe what happened, and then it comes to a conclusion that we need to talk about to determine whether or not the board concurs with our subsequent recommendation, which is to move beyond American and go to the second low bidder of BizBank, who we've met with. We've gone over these discrepancies that American had. We've gone over the scope of work. They believe that they do have this full scope of work. They're going to stand behind their bid. They're going to do the contract. Their contract was about $17,000 more than American on about a $300,000 contract.
That's the difference in their bids, yes.
The $17,000. So that's the round numbers. And just go ahead with BizBing and accept American's request to have their bid withdrawn. That's the cleanest, most straightforward, get the job done approach that we can see. But that's not a conclusion that I personally arrived at very easily because you do have other avenues to pursue if desired. They had to submit a bid bond with their bid. You could pursue their bond with their bonding company for the damages, which is, you know, 10% of their bid or the difference in the bid. Or you could try to force them to do the job, and we tried that, and they said, no, we're not going to eat $17,000. You could try to negotiate with them and see if you could get something out of them. But in the end, I kind of, where I got to personally was I stepped back to June and said, okay, if we had come through this process in June and they said, you know what, we made a mistake, we can't deliver, we have a mechanism in our bidding documents that allows bidders to withdraw their bid if it's truly something that they missed and they made an honest mistake. So I just went back to that and decided, at this point in time, with where we're at, we don't need lawyers involved. We don't need bonding companies involved. My recommendation is just to let American Grading out, move on, and award the project to BizBank. The bid even with the additional $700,000, we still have plenty of contingency and savings in Churchill. We would have experienced this $17,000 back in June if they had realized they made a mistake anyway, so I don't feel like we're out money. And the district is out money. It's just an unfortunate process that we had to go through to get to this point.
Two questions, Mark.
Yep.
Do we have damages? If we do, what are the total about?
Well, see, that's the thing, is we really don't have damages.
Enough said. And then what was the third bid? And this, I didn't usually have all five, but
yeah.
Was it way off the 317?
It was in the, I want to say it was in the 320s.
Yeah, this,
so it was close.
This thing's at 305, and I think there was a number in the 320s.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Jack, how much money did they say they wanted to do the deal?
They actually wanted more than the $17,000, didn't
they? Yeah, they thought that it was their initial proposal to us was that they had two options. The first option was $41,000. The second option was about $53,000, based on their initial presentation that they thought there was something wrong with the documents.
Yeah, and they were looking for more money because they thought we the collective, we made a mistake. They wanted more than the $17,000.
So with this thing goes in, it's not jeopardizing the project. That American didn't start work and then Visiting's got to come in and clean anything up or
no. It's clean.
So we'll go back on our time machine.
That's kind of, you know, I talked about this with Fred half a dozen times, and I know he talked to American several times, and John was involved. And I just said, you know, at some point, what would we have done if this had come up the way it normally comes up, is which is in the scope review process, and this is what we would have recommended.
When does your work begin in the construction timeline?
We've already started demolition.
Mm-hmm. So work is around the corner.
Yeah, this. We
and
need
that's it. Why you're asking for
we need. That's the other thing. That's not the driving factor, but if we go another route, then we will be getting delayed, too. The project will be delayed.
Have you done business with Visible?
Yeah, they're working for you right now. Yep.
Okay, so we have a good work history with them.
Yep. Okay.
Any other questions on that? Okay. We'll close that portion.